Mammoth
Audio. This is Scammapalooza. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au.
The goal of any psychic, whether they're a con artist or really believe that they've got supernatural powers, is to convince their victim that they are the real deal. In his television show, Unbelievable, comedian Lawrence Leung took it one step further, conning skeptics into believing that they had psychic powers. We're talking mediums, magic, and manipulation. This is Scammapalooza.
So you are a comedian, or a skeptic, a magician, a writer, a filmmaker. Is that all? Is that all of the things that you have to admit when you come into the country?
Yeah. amazingly. So that's far too many things to list. When I was a lot younger, I would sort of never think that I would be doing what I do now. Although I remember when I was going to Edinburgh to do the Fringe Festival, and I was performing a show called Sucker, where it was telling the story of being a con artist. And when I got to the customs there, the immigration officers asked me, you know, what are you doing here? And I didn't say, I'm doing a show about con artists and criminals. I just said, oh, I'm a magician. And that's not something you want to admit to people out loud. And they asked me to prove myself as a magician. So I had to pull out cards and block this queue of people waiting, and I had to do a card trick. And of course they brought over their, you know, fellow immigration officers to, you know, watch me. And I luckily I was okay with a double lift, so they let me through. You are a magician, come on through.
Yes, you may pass. I use magician at customs as well, just because the answering the question, you know, what do you do for a living or why are you here, is I'm a magician, has so many follow-up questions that they soon forget to ask you about your unclaimed meats, or, you know, yeah, have you been on a farm, or when was your last blood transfusion? Yeah, all those other annoying questions.
Yeah. David Copperfield, not the fact you have Ebola.
A lot of people would know you from Unbelievable.
Yeah.
You described it before as a documentary series.
Yeah, I guess it's a comedy documentary series about how things aren't always what they seem. It's interesting because I wanted to make a show that was based on all those science, you know, those kids shows in the afternoon, like the Curiosity Show, all those awesome science shows when you're a kid, and you're like, this is awesome. But if I was, now that I'm an adult, what would I make for adults that still had that sort of sense of, you know, wonder and joy, but at the same time, through the lens of science, without telling people, by the way, we're going to throw in a few science concepts here, you know, about, you know, critical thinking, confirmation bias, you know, pareidolia, all those things that, you know, stuffy skeptics like to talk about. You know, maybe there's something else going on that's not particularly like psychic powers. Maybe it's just what's going on in our heads. Maybe it's just human psychology. We even made skeptics believe that they were psychic for a week.
And that's something that I found absolutely fascinating. You set yourself a goal of not just, why don't we try and convince someone that I'm psychic, but you said, no, by the end of this series, I want to get a skeptic and convince them that they are psychic.
Yeah.
And that everything they have based their life around is wrong.
Yeah, well, you got to put your money where your mouth is, because if you're making a show where you're saying, oh, you know, people can, you know, fool themselves or fool others into believing that there's like UFOs among, or aliens amongst us, or there's ghosts in the attic, you got to have to turn the lens on yourself too, and think that if you're such a skeptic, well, what about what you believe? Can you be fooled as well? You know, you may think you're the most rational person in the room, but also you come into the world with all your own assumptions. You can be fooled. So, one episode was also about magicians, and how do you fool a magician if they spend their whole lives learning about deception? Can you deceive a magician? So this was the type of series that we wanted to make, this sort of fun series where we got to test out psychology principles with real people and have a whole lot of fun along the way, but also sort of reserve judgment to the audience. You know, the audience decides what they want to believe at the end of each episode. But most of all, I'm not making fun of any particular group, skeptics or believers. I just always make fun of myself in the end.
Well, let's start then at the beginning, but and see if we can work our way to a position in which you, Lawrence Leung, a comedian from Melbourne, manages to convince someone that they are psychic. So the first thing you did was you went out and found real psychics or people who claim they really have psychic abilities. Yeah. What was your vetting process? How did you decide, okay, what sort of psychic do we want? Which are the ones that are going to be most useful?
Well, I guess it depends on people's claims. The stronger the claim, the more, I guess, people should back themselves. And in this essence, we're doing a community, consumer affairs service, I guess. If someone really believes that they are a psychic, that's fine. If they're peddling their wares, in a financial way, it's like, well, it's like any business. People should be able to prove their claims or actually demonstrate their services that they're doing. So I think that's pretty much the base level. But I visited mind, body, spirit festivals and had my reading told to me by all sorts of spirit guides, who were like ghostly relatives from my past. The interesting thing is, I would have spent like maybe over an hour just going to maybe 20 different, mediums, and each person gave me different advice, and they had contradictory readings about who I was as a person, other than you were very studious and your parents have high expectations of you. Considering my parents are Asian, I think, wow, they're psychic.
You played the cello, you're good at mathematics.
Yeah. You played a lot of ping pong. Yeah, so, wow.
So psychics are racist, no? That is, though, I mean, all joking aside, the idea of looking at someone and making broad sweeping generalizations about them on appearance is that's lesson number one of faking psychic abilities, right?
It's just
looking someone and saying, well, they are of a background that I recognize and I know certain stereotypes, and that's a good place to start. Because from there you went out into the street and set up on a milk crate claiming you had psychic powers or giving away psychic readings, and you got people to sit down, you looked at them and then used the information that you had just by looking at them, their age, their gender, their background, and you did some pretty accurate readings.
Yeah, pretty accurate readings. We set up a tent at a market, and we were quite fair about it. We had a camera crew in the tent. We set up, cameras. We had people outside saying to people, do you want to get your reading read? We're making a documentary about whether there's evidence for psychic powers. Go in there. This guy will try to read you, tell you your fortune. And at the end of it, when you come out, give him a rating between 1 and 10. I did a lot of research into Barnum statements and Fora statements, which are, I guess, they're statements that a lot of cold readers or a lot of, fortune tellers and horoscopes use. They say you have a little bit of this trait, but you also have a bit of what is the opposite to that trait. So it's like you were shy at times, but at other times you are the life of the party. So I was doing a whole bunch of Fora statements. And also we had this conceit where behind them and unbeknownst to them, we had this little curtain open. And on the screen, we played karaoke videos of Madonna songs, Eminem songs, all sorts of, cheesy karaoke clips. And I was reading out the subtitles of the karaoke songs, to these people as if they were readings, but they didn't know what these random things I was saying. And it turns out that we thought, well, this is how I planned it. I planned that. We kind of expected that the Fora statements would work because all the literature in psychology says that they do work. These Fora statements, people believe them. And so we thought, okay, that's all fine and good. But I've seen this in other documentaries. And I've seen it in psychology classes. But so we thought, okay, but because our show is a comedy show, we should end it with a little bit of a comedy zing at the end. So that's why we had the karaoke clips. But as it turns out, with these, genuine people who came into the tent, they completely rejected the Fora statements. They kept on saying, no, that's a bit vague. It could be anyone. Oh, it's not me. Oh, yeah, maybe. But as soon as I started doing the karaoke clips, just actually saying, just the Madonna lyrics, express yourself. Some of the more bizarre the lyrics, the more they read themselves into it.
Yeah.
And actually believed it to the point where, I was playing Eminem's Lose Yourself. And this guy was like, this is all about me. And he started telling me about how, he wanted to be a musician. And the fact he went, hang on, that's Eminem. And I was like, I thought he'd busted me. And I said, oh yeah, how does that relate to you? And he says, yes, because, and he just interpreted this entire story. And it's weird because I know I wasn't psychic, but all of a sudden, like, I could feel that sort of power that psychics could feel if they were just saying random statements or the first thing that popped into their heads, and people were validating those things. I too would think that I was psychic because these people really believed it. And one of the ones that never went to air that we had to edit out was this woman who started crying during it because I was reading the lyrics to Who Let the Dogs Out by seminal artist Baha Men. And it wasn't Who Let the Dogs Out. It was Khaleesi's Milkshakes. My milkshakes bring all the boys to the yard. And all of a sudden she went very quiet and said, and she just read it into someone, I think someone who had passed away, some children or something, because the next line is their life is better than yours or something like that. And she said, yeah, their lives are better than, could have been better than mine. And she got quite wistful and a tear, you know, tearful. And then after that, you know, we kind of stopped it and, you know, we explained everything to her. So that was fine. But I kind of felt like I probably shouldn't go on because this is how powerful it can be, that people can actually believe that for people pretending to actually be psychic and using these cold reading techniques and Barnum statements, they can actually convince people that they're psychic despite the fact that they're not.
It sounds as if, I mean, obviously, you have the sort of responsibility as someone who is faking it to not go too far because you are doing it for, even though it's for entertainment education, you're not sort of dissecting frogs and where it's okay to sacrifice a couple for the greater good of all the other frogs.
Yeah.
You've got to be an honest guy about it. But it also sounds as if you can't just as a fake psychic, pick up a book on cold reading, say, oh, you've got a scar on your left knee and know that that is correct for 70 or 80% of the population. But you've got to say things which, that suit you, that suit you as the reader as well as suit them as the person listening.
Absolutely.
And so when you were sort of reciting things that were from a dry textbook, they came across as dry. But when you started pulling out the more poetic lyrics, they obviously,
That's a real testament to, you know, Khaleesi's work. But it's true. People were totally reading into it. So many times, like there was one girl who came into the reading and she was silent the whole time. It was like she didn't believe it, or she just sort of sat there just going, okay, yeah, all right. And then she left, and of course, you know, with the cameras, they interviewed her and said, okay, between 1 and 10, what would you give her? And I thought I completely bombed, so this one probably won't make the edit. And then she said 9 out of 10. And they're like, well, why were you watching the footage? Why were you so quiet in there? And she said, because I was absolutely stunned. I've gone to, like, psychics a lot, and he was the most accurate psychic I've ever had. I was like, oh god, how could they believe this? Part of it is setting up the context. You know, I was dressed, I guess, as a psychic. I had the robes. I was in a tent. I kind of maybe had this allure, and also because it was a challenge for them, because it was a documentary crew going, is this guy in here psychic? What do you think? Go in there and find out. And so I think for a lot of people, they went in with quite low expectations, but came out with being impressed.
Yeah. The thing with the challenge, though, is you're, with the challenge aspect, is that you are quite likable. And so if they come in and they meet you and they like you, they are invested in your success. So it's much like a stage hypnotist who will bring up 20 people and hopefully at least 10 of those people will, even if they don't fall into the trance, will just kind of go along with it.
Because play along with it.
Because they're on your team. So you're a psychic. They're a person who believes in psychic powers, and there's this documentary crew that they've got to prove themselves in front of. So you've got that kind of aspect of, they kind of want you to succeed.
Well, they want the abilities to work, because the psychic was the underdog with all these cameras pointing at him. Yeah, that could have been part of it as well. Absolutely.
And just because I can't let a segment go past without discussing race, do you think that your Asian background was made you a better, a more believable psychic? Was there something about your inscrutable?
Oh, I don't know,
character or something.
Asians really known for being having psychic powers and things like that.
Yeah, there's a certain mystical, I don't know about psychics, but there's something mystical about, you know, Asian people. Am I being racist?
Or there's chi, you know.
There's chi, yeah. There's a bit of that. And I just watched Kung Fu Hustle last night, so I've got a bit of that kind of.
Is that sort of Shaolin type?
Yeah.
Mysticism.
Exactly, and,
Yeah, maybe if I was like jumping from like bamboo, you know, tree to bamboo tree, flying through the air, maybe I could convince people a bit more.
But I think if you did a stadium, one of those big stadium psychics, and that's how you entered, just with a bit of, like, you just opened the show with a little wire work.
Yeah. I mean, I was dressed definitely as a guru type stereotype, that's for sure. Even though that's from a different subcontinent. I was mixing it up. I was a very meta psychic.
Yeah, no, you're a cosmopolitan psychic.
Yeah, psychic of the world.
So you had visited psychics who claimed they're real and sort of got a good read on them, and then you'd also tried out the Barnum statements and the cold reading and realized that it was possible that you could convince people, at least
and feeling very guilty about it too.
Did you ever feel like you should like you needed to pull the plug?
Yeah, it was probably about that time when that woman started crying when I was, reading out Khaleesi's Milkshake karaoke lyrics to her, knowing that she invested in this idea that I was maybe channeling at least the memory of people who had died. And to me, I find that quite disturbing and morbid and abhorrent for some people to claim that they can communicate to dead relatives of people, like mediums who claim they can do this. Listen, I can't say that they're not actually doing it, but what I can say is that perhaps sometimes these wounds need to be closed in the sense that people need closure when it comes to grief. And what these mediums are doing are providing a way of just opening things up again and never having closure on your grief.
To your mind, what is worse, being a fake psychic and taking people's money, or being a real psychic and then using your gift to make money when you could be using it for, giving that gift away? Which do you think is worse? It feels, I sometimes feel like if you were really psychic or really believed you were psychic, you would have such a desire just to share that with the world. And the idea that you're going to charge $50-$100 a pop for a reading feels like a grubby use of a pretty incredible power.
Yeah, I mean, it would, if it was, I haven't seen any existence of it yet. I'm yet to be proven wrong, and I want to be proven wrong. It'd be great if there was psychic powers. I mean, Wi-Fi is really unreliable. Mm-hmm. Bluetooth is worse. If psychic powers did exist, and it's in, the human experience and within people, and it's natural, surely evolution is slowly gonna, by just natural selection, it might get rooted out because we don't need it anymore, because we have got mobile phones and we have the internet and we can talk to anyone from around the world.
I don't know.
Maybe we don't. Maybe those traits aren't important anymore.
But I think using a mobile phone is not as good as... No, they're probably about the same, because you get your phone out, you try and write someone a text and autocorrect kind of gets it wrong. Or you're talking to Siri and it's, I'm sensing that it's... Is this what you mean? No, that's not what I meant. And you have to go back and do it again. And that's much the same as a psychic going, is there someone, a name beginning with B, Ben, Beth, Betty, something? Is that what you mean? I'm not sure.
Siri's a shithouse medium.
She's just a very bad psychic. You heard it here first. Now, you didn't just look at the world of psychics. You went and looked at psychologists as well.
Yep.
And the author of the book Influence, whose name I have never said out loud, and I'm not going to start now because I can't pronounce his surname.
Yeah, Robert Cialdini.
I hear Cialdini.
Cialdini, or which sounds spelled like Cialdini, but yep. I think he said Cialdini.
It sounds like Cialdini, which is like a famous dog magician.
A very persuasive dog magician.
Yeah, he just looks like, and you have some more treats, Cialdini. Anyway, now that we've insulted the man, it is a fantastic book, and it's toilet books, which are the books that usually it's a joke book, or it's the book that you just want to keep coming back to.
Yeah.
That is one of my toilet books.
Are you saying that you have it in the bathroom, or or you're making the metaphor because you have to keep going to the bathroom all the time.
Yeah, I have psychological diarrhea. Is what I'm suggesting. No, I mean it's literally in my bathroom.
It's very influential toilet paper.
Yeah, at the moment I have that and Sam Harris's Line, which is a great book. I also have a murder mystery in there that
light
I just reading, never got to the end
light
of.
Light reading. I mean,
no, it is a sort of dip in and out reading. Again, that's not a metaphor. That's literally what I'm doing. Let's move on. Anyway, you met the man behind the book.
Yes, Robert. And he was great because he has all these great principles in his book, and he is quite an influential author in the sense that a lot of whenever you look at anything in terms of like marketing or business or persuasion, they've always referenced his work. He's very much like the original dude to lecture about issues when it comes to persuasion and psychological techniques and things like that.
To the point that a lot of the stuff in the book now is like... is very simple. You read it and you really, this is meant to be groundbreaking because it's so well read.
It's so entrenched now. Everyone sort of knows the idea of like conformity.
Foot in the door principles. It's all in there. And so what did you pick up from him that was useful in this kind of psychic journey you're on?
Well, we wanted to find out how, you know, we wanted to see how his principles would work out there in real life. So we used all of his techniques in this park, and we set up a queue that led to nowhere with a red carpet with a bouncer at the very front of this red carpet, which led to nothing, and see if we could form a queue of people because it just looked like it was important and trendy. And all of a sudden, once two people got curious, the third person came along. Mm-hmm. And before long, we had a queue of about, I don't know, at least 9 to 15 people wanting to know what the queue was for. And the idea...
So you had a queue for the queue.
We got a queue for the queue. And then that formed another queue at the end of that queue.
A queue cubed, one might say.
Yeah, we didn't have to have a new Apple product or anything. People were there purely because... I guess conformity, but also consensus. There was the idea that something was happening. Everyone was into it,
and that's why those big live psychic spectaculars, where it's not just a one-on-one reading, where you have the celebrity psychic standing on stage, plucking people out of the audience, like an evangelical preacher, are so successful because not only do you have a lot of people who can confirm your Barnum statements, you've also got the group think that you must get in that environment where no one wants to be the person to stand up and go, wait, hang on, this seems awfully vague.
We were whipping these people into a frenzy of excitement, but at the same time, confusion. And the only way to get out of the confusion was to follow the authority and the instructions.
So now you've got skills of influence, you've got the cold reading techniques, and you've got the psychics to use as role models. You also, in the series, sort of took a journey into the world of magicians as well, which is obviously a shared love of both you and I, the world of magic. And you attempted to see if you could fool our mutual friend Tim Ellis.
Well, it's interesting because having sort of grown up loving magic, I guess you get a sense that you can understand, and you're almost suspicious of reality. You often don't believe your own eyes and your own assumptions, and that's a very healthy thing, to kind of question everything. And magic gives you that sort of, gives you an insight that, you know, you can be fooled. But how do you fool a magician? Because magicians are people who know this area, they know this world. And the ultimate test in this episode was to see if I could fool Tim Ellis, who is, you know, a master magician. You know, he's a FISM award winner, which is like the Olympics of magic. He's been doing magic for over 30 years now. Could I fool a master magician? And so... what I did was I invited him to a restaurant, and we had all these hidden cameras everywhere. And the invitation was, I wanted to show him a magic trick and get his feedback. So he came along to this Thai restaurant, and we sat at this table, and I pulled out a very, very standard card trick.
If people want to look it up themselves and watch it online, it's the Phil Deck.
The Phil Deck.
The Phil Deck. So you can, I'm sure there is a performance of the Phil Deck online that people can have a look at.
But unbeknownst to Tim, the entire restaurant was changing from Thai to Mexican. So we're talking about the decor. We're talking about things on the walls. We were changing statues from goddesses, Thai goddesses to cacti. The other customers were all actors, and they were switching their Thai meals from Mexican meals, which are hidden underneath the tables. The waiters were changing from Thai waitresses to people wearing sombreros. And even our tea was getting switched for tequila bottles and things like that. All during, this trick that I was going through with Tim Ellis. I was doing this, routine. And of course it culminated with a mariachi band appearing at the end and playing, and ended off with a funny, end. But Tim did not see the world changing around him, despite the fact that he's a magician and sort of can see things, and can notice persuasion techniques and notice things going awry more so than I imagine most normal people, because he's a magician, he can detect these things.
Mm.
And I remember a week beforehand when in the production meeting, some of the producers were thinking, oh, what if this goes wrong? If this goes wrong in the sense that it doesn't work, you don't really have an ending to this particular episode about magic, because A, he might, get really angry about it, that we're trying to fool him. We may not get his release forms afterwards. He may not sign the release. He might be insulted that we've fooled a magician. It may not just work. He might just look at it and just call it straight away, because it's pretty ballsy. Like, the entire restaurant is changing out, and we've only got one shot at this. And so there was a discussion at one point, maybe we should give it a go, and if it doesn't work, we'll just tell him, and then we'll just reshoot it and fake it. But we put the brakes on that, because that's not the whole point of our series. The whole point of our series is to see if we can actually do these experiments. And I was convinced it would work, purely because I had done so much research in change blindness and attention, misdirection. Mm. The whole idea of, the gorilla in that basketball experiment. It's an experiment where you watch a video of a black team, a team wearing black t-shirts and a team wearing white t-shirts.
That's the third racist reference in this particular episode.
And the gorilla is black as well.
Indeed, yep, yep.
It's a person dressed as gorilla. So you're meant to count the number of times the ball's been passed between one particular team, and you concentrate on it so much that you don't notice that a person wearing gorilla walks right past the camera, stands in the middle of the players, and then walks out again. And this is something they show in, first year undergraduate psychology courses. And, it's really difficult to even know that there's a gorilla walking past. So using that idea, we tried to make a, change blindness test to fool a magician. Is this possible? Will it work? And it did. And it turned out better than we expected. And we spoke to Tim afterwards, and he was not insulted at all. He loved the idea that a magician can be fooled, because this is why people become magicians in the first place, is because there's a trick out there that fools them as a little kid, and they decide, I love magic, and they specialize in deception. It's very rare that they are deceived nowadays after seeing so many different tricks across the decades. So when they are fooled genuinely, they absolutely adore that sense of being fooled again. So A, he wasn't insulted, and he was happy to be part of our series. But the second thing was, he told me afterwards, the reason why he didn't see it was because I knew my audience. He said, this is what magicians do. They always know their audience. So if you're performing for, the public, you do certain tricks. But if you're performing at, say, magicians' conventions, you have to do particular tricks that will fool magicians, because magicians know the methods. So if you do something to lead them down the garden path, that they will know that method. But then you do a completely different method, you can absolutely fool magicians.
Magicians love to see like a twist on a famous trick. So you're expecting one trick and then you do another one.
So what happened was he admitted that, oh, I've seen this Phil card trick 1,000 times. It's such a, a hack trick. But because he wanted to give me feedback afterwards, he spent the entire routine in his head going, how do I criticize him in the most polite, diplomatic way possible? So in his head, he was rehearsing what he was going to say to me.
Yeah.
And that's why he was so focused on me and the trick.
Mm.
Because he knew that he would have to judge me afterwards.
He's trying very hard to be polite.
Yeah, he was trying so hard to be polite, he didn't see the room around him change.
What's great is watching his expression on his face when he realizes what's going on. And it's not like a layperson's look of confusion. You actually have to, I think you actually ask him, wait, did I fool you? Because his expression is just blank as he's looking around. He's processing a card trick, and then he just looks around, and now he's trying to process an entire room that has changed, and his brain just shuts down, and he just sort of looks at you and goes, okay, yes, well, I've just seen a miracle, and that's happened, so let's have some tacos then.
Yeah, ole. And then we did shots.
And then we did shots, yes. So you talked about the gorilla, and sort of all that, the situational blindness and all of those types of techniques. And for that, you went and spoke with some famous, the neurologists or psychologists?
Neuroscientists.
Neuroscientists.
Yeah.
Who have written a book on sleight of mind.
Sleight of mind.
On the psychology and neurology of magic. Did you pick anything up from them that was useful in terms of the psychic abilities?
Magic is a little bit more than just the neuropsychology of magic and attention. There's a whole lot of other things going on as well, because it doesn't explain, you know, things like the one ahead principle. It doesn't explain expectation and a lot of other things as well. If you're just talking about the physicality of distracting attention, magic has so many, it's such a rich area of psychology. It covers so many other areas than just neuroscience. But what it was, it sort of gave me a primer for when I met Apollo Robbins, who's a pickpocket, who they also worked with in terms of trying to work out how attention can be easily manipulated. And this was a guy who, in the streets of Las Vegas, was taking my tie and taking my belt and my wallets and my mobile phone. Despite the fact that I knew he was a pickpocket and we were filming this, he was still able to steal all these objects that I was wearing and hiding on my body. And that was amazing, because I knew that I was being tricked. I know magic techniques, and he still got me every time.
So at this point, you've got your skills together. You've got cold reading, the magic, the influence. You've spoken with neurologists and pickpockets, and it's time to put together this grand experiment to see whether you can convince a skeptic that they are psychic.
Yeah, this was the final episode. I guess it was the culmination of all of those things that I'd learned across the series, and also the idea that, you know, to prove that even skeptics can be fooled, you know, you can fool yourself, and other people can fool you, sometimes without you knowing it. So we set up almost a Truman Show hidden camera situation where we found this guy who was a very rational, skeptical computer scientist, and his sister was a psychologist, and she was in on the gag with us. And so she brought him along to a psychology experiment that her colleagues were doing, because they needed some subjects, and he came along because it sounded interesting. And we wanted to test a psychic, and it was a mentalist, a magician who specializes in pretending to be a psychic. His name is Mark Mayer.
He was so convincing.
Very convincing. And he was giving a prediction of our subject. Basically, he was giving predictions of all this amazing stuff that was going to happen to him during the week. Of course, we were going to make these things happen to him during the week. He was doing readings, and then we asked him, of course, do you believe this guy is psychic? And he's saying, no, it's really vague. We're saying things like, you know, you're going to travel soon, you're going to have amazing luck. And then a few nights later, we had one of his friends take him to this RSL pub, and they were having, a meat raffle on stage. And then there was a challenge where people had to guess the number of, lollies in a jar. And if you could do this accurately, you'd win a prize. And of course, we just made this giant magic trick where, you know, we rigged it so that he would be one of the participants who would be up on stage. And there was like this little 10-year-old kid and there's this other guy. They all had to guess a number. And meanwhile, I was hidden behind this. They basically made this giant coffin on stage, this wooden box where they had this little sliding panel which would reveal the number of the correct number of how many, you know, lollies in the jar. But of course, I'm hidden inside this box writing the numbers and trying to slot it into the panel just at the last second before this guy, before, you know, the host had to open it. So he came up with this guess, and of course we made it accurate so that he was absolutely 100% correct. And then we thought, okay, this is great. The prize was a trip to Queensland. So that was the holiday that was predicted by our psychic. And he also had extreme luck, which we also predicted.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the host on the stage asked him, so how did you get the number? You must be psychic. And he says, oh, no, I do a lot of computer science. It's just mathematics, pure mathematics. So in his head, his maths is so good, he could guess how many lollies were in a jar rather than claim it was anything supernatural.
And that is the sort of, it's almost like anti-magical thinking, you know,
yeah.
That we as human beings, we like to sort of find magical solutions for things. But when you're a skeptic, you'll grasp at any sort of mathematical or scientific principle you can in order to not have magic, even to the point of being ridiculous.
Yeah, that's right. And it's funny when people, and I love this idea. I love the idea when there's something you can't explain. Why do some people go for a supernatural explanation and another one will go for his idea, which was a mathematic, he thought he was doing pi squared r and all this stuff.
Yes. Way off, wasn't he?
The little 10-year-old was so close and he was like 100 off. But so his explanation was just as bad in a sense, but he was grabbing for it because his worldview was coming from mathematics and rationality. So that was really quite interesting. So it's like that for us was like, oh, we still can't convince him he's psychic. You know, he came back a few days later and talk to the psychologists again. We were like, yeah, surely he's going to think that the psychic was correct with his predictions. And he could completely didn't put the two events together, that the psychic was saying that he was going to have a trip soon, a holiday soon, or the fact that he was having a lucky week. He was like, no, it's just, he couldn't even draw the two things together.
So he was specifically asked, did you have a lucky week, and are you going on a trip soon? And
no, we wanted him to draw the conclusion
himself,
leading to it.
Yeah.
But he couldn't
make the connection.
He couldn't make the connection at all. And the only time we succeeded was when we brought in a, you know, world-renowned, award-winning sleight-of-hand magician, Simon Coronel.
Simon, yeah.
And Simon and I had spent many Skype sessions weeks leading up to this trying to work out the perfect ESP card routine to fool a skeptic under, you know, test conditions. And basically, it's using those Zener symbols.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people may be familiar with this from the opening scene of Ghostbusters. You know, you get the wavy line, the star, the cross, the square, and the circle. And we designed an experiment where 60 cards were shuffled, and we had to get our subject to try to guess which cards were under which symbol. So we'd draw out the symbols and then he would have to lay out the cards that he got a sense what the identity of the cards were, just lay them into these piles. And Simon was so good at switching cards and switching decks, you know, under the nose of this guy, that when we turned the cards over, he was like, you know, so accurate. We didn't make it 100% accurate.
No, that was very clever. Yeah, he didn't get it because 100% is too much.
Just it's too perfect.
Too slick.
Yeah, we had maybe 3 or 4 cards off out of the 60 cards, but it was enough for him to know, as someone who knows mathematics so well and probability, that it was so astronomical. He was so excited that he ran out to the waiting room where his sister was waiting because she had done the test too. And he was like, how many did you get? And this is where the sibling rivalry came in. He was like, how much did you get? And she said, oh, no, maybe, you know, one in five, obviously. And he was like, oh, I'm psychic. And he was like taunting his sister, not knowing he was being filmed by hidden cameras, going, I'm psychic. I think I'm psychic. For a split second, for those, you know, 10 minutes, absolutely believe that he might have some sort of psychic powers.
And you finished it up by taking it one step further, didn't you?
Yeah. So all of our experiments and stunts we do in this show, we always take it to that. We always take it too far to the point it becomes comedic or just stupid.
Yeah.
The only way that he would believe he was psychic wasn't, you know, he could, you know, see things in a jar or believe that a psychic was giving a true reading. The only way he'd believe in psychic powers was if we could fool him via maths and probability, which was the ESP test.
Mm.
But of course, we took it one step further and we tried to give him the powers of telekinesis. So we put this 20-cent coin on a table and asked him to concentrate on it. And of course, it shot across the table. And the whole table moved and slammed into the wall as well, because I was inside this table that we had built. It looked like a filing cabinet, but it was actually hollow on the inside, with my Fred Flintstone type legs running across the floor. And inside I had a video camera and a TV, so I could see what was going on.
You seem to spend a lot of time in this series inside boxes.
Hiding inside boxes and cabinets and, you know, tricking things, having magnets. So it was a magnetized fake 20-cent coin that I would, you know, fling across, and then with my legs just charge across the room and smash into the wall, to which point he was like just lost. And then I jumped out of the table, much like, you know, someone jumping out of a birthday cake.
Yeah.
And revealed all, and his sister and all of the people who were involved in our stunts across the whole week came out.
And he was extraordinarily relieved.
Yeah, yeah. It was just thrilling to it was so difficult to plan this week out. It was such a logistical nightmare. And for it to work at the end, it was just, I felt for us, it was like, we were so glad, because it was the perfect culmination of the series. All the stuff that we had learned, all the people that we talked to along the way, from scientists to psychologists to skeptics to psychics even, and put all these techniques together to have this moment at the end that actually worked and make a skeptic believe that they were psychic.
So at the beginning, you said that you would love to have psychic powers proven to exist. And,
yeah.
You know, that's something you'd really love. And yet, sounds like for this guy, he was a little bit traumatized by the possibility that what he believed was wrong, that what he had always thought, that maybe his rational way of thinking about the world wasn't the right way to be going, and perhaps there really is something more to the world. Do you really think that you would be happy if you discovered that psychic powers really existed, or do you think you would have an identity crisis as well?
Yeah, it's so funny. It's so funny. I think, you know, growing up, I was always interested in, like, ghost stories and UFO stories and superpowers, just reading comic books, just loving superheroes and everyone having these gifts and powers. I've always wanted to have all this stuff and believe in this stuff. But I guess I know the difference between magical thinking and wishful thinking. But then when you realize that, you know, of course, with mobile phones and the internet and wireless and all these things, that science has just made a probe just go past Pluto recently. And that is purely because we have the scientific method, which is the best detector for bullshit we've ever had in history. And we put it all together and we can have this probe take photos of Pluto, to the point where my news feed is completely filled with memes of Pluto.
Yeah.
That is a victory for, I just guess the wonder of the universe is, you don't have to make up fantasy situations. The world is pretty much amazing as it is anyway. I think it was Martin Gardner had this wonderful quote, which was, there's enough wonder going on in the garden, you don't have to invent fairies at the bottom of it.
Ah, that's a lovely quote. To finish up with, I have the Con Man's Dictionary, which is, I give you a word, and then you have to try and figure out either what that word means or come up with your best guess. You're a really difficult person to come up with something for, because you have such a broad knowledge of a lot of different scams. So I'm going to go with Spirit Trumpet.
Spirit Trumpet. Ah, now that must be from the, I guess maybe late 1800s up until maybe the 1930s when spiritualism was at its height. These mm-hmm. are people who did seances and believed they could talk to the dead. And one of the tools was to put up it looks like a gramophone, the flower drum of a gramophone they held up to their ears, and you could hear the spirits talking to you, but it was a trick. Am I correct?
Yeah, so a spirit trumpet, it was used in seances. It was sort of said that this is what it's used for. The main purpose of it was to have it float around the room.
Oh, okay.
One of the most famous methods was that everyone would join hands and the lights would be turned off, and that the trumpet would sort of be flung across the room by unseen means. And what would happen is that the psychic or medium would, in the darkness, position the trumpet on their head like a dunce cap.
Oh, yeah.
And then fling it across the room so it clatter on the floor as if it's been pushed by unseen forces. So that's
brilliant.
That is pretty much correct. That is a spirit trumpet. Well done.
Thank you. It's amazing the tricks that people did in seances back then. If they could just turn on the lights and you could see what was going on, it must have looked hilarious.
That's the difference. That's the difference between drama and comedy, is just you've just got to turn the lights on. Really, thank you so much for being on the show, Lawrence.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure.
Will you come back again?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we should definitely do our film club idea of watching a classic con artist movie, and there's so many out there, but doing our commentary for it.
Yes. Just tackle. Fantastic. It's a deal.
Excellent.
As always, you can find out more at conman.com.au. This has been Scammapalooza.